Blog Talk Radio.
This is Our Common Ground. Thank you for joining us tonight for Talk That Matters. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground.
To do because corporate media isn't doing the job for us. Corporate media is not informing us of what we have to be informed of. It's not permitting our voices to be heard. It's just not. What you do is you stick to facts.
Tonight, at Our Common Ground, Bruce Dixon, editor, longtime activist, habitual troublemaker. He is the managing editor of Black Agenda Report. Also in our second page, the Sports Fans Coalition, Consumerism, Sports, and Our Tax Dollars. This is Our Common Ground. Speaking truth to power and ourselves. Stay with us. I'm Janice Graham. I'll be listening for you.
We're so happy to have you with us tonight here at Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves. I'm Janice Graham, and my co-host, Alpha of the Alpha Show of TruthWorks Network, will be joining me. I suppose that all of us are just inundated with oppression, issues of oppression, issues of justice, issues of personal and earthly tragedy. It is bearing down on us, and on top of all of it is a political landscape which is not very nice, which is not very comfortable, which speaks volumes to what we have neglected, what we have not nurtured, and the things that we need to do. Thank you so much for being here with us on Our Common Ground. If this is your first trip on Our Common Ground, we talk and speak in the language of truth, no matter how painful from time to time truth might be. Tonight at Our Common Ground, we are going to be visiting with Bruce Dixon. He's the managing editor, longtime activist, and he is just a habitual troublemaker. He is the managing editor of the Black Agenda Report. If you have not, and if you do not support the Black Agenda Report, if you do not know about it, then you are really out of the loop on important independent media in this country. In the fall of 2006, Glenn Ford, Bruce Dixon, Margaret Kimberly, and Letitia Stills of the CBC Monitor left Black Commentator, which Glenn Ford had co-founded and edited since 2002, and launched Black Agenda Report. And we will be meeting with the managing editor of the Black Agenda Report. In the second page, we'll be meeting with Scott Weiss. He is the New Jersey, New York coordinator of Sports Fans Coalition. If you do not know about them, then you should. It is a public policy agenda setter made up of members and a board looking at advocacy in front of the government, of both state and national government, and how they can make a difference to start tackling such issues as sports venues, college and university receipts of public funds in providing affordable seating throughout sporting venues, school participation and bona fide national championships, how sports fans must be able to view local sporting events. The chances are that your home team plays in an arena that were built in part with public resources. There are stadiums all over this country built with cash from the government, like the new national ballparks in Washington, D.C. And then there are places that where roads and right-of-ways and other public goods for the stadiums are created. It all comes out of our tax dollars, and it is backed up by federal regulations enforced by the FCC that sometimes prohibit cable or satellite from carrying a game if the local broadcaster has secured the rights. And I have invited Scott because I want to get this straight. First, our money and resources are used to build a home team's new venue, then the tickets are priced too high for us to afford it. Then we want to watch the game on TV, but because of local broadcaster rights, we can't. And we are not alone. I know that I am not alone in that concern. And that is where we are going to travel tonight at Our Common Ground, and we hope that you will stay with us. Before we bring on our guest, Bruce Dixon, the managing editor of the Black Agenda Report, I want to take you into, for those who know the Black Agenda Report, you will find it familiar territory, but what I want to do is take new people who are not familiar with this important independent black media. You should know the Black Agenda Report. In this first page, tonight at Our Common Ground, Bruce Dixon, the managing editor of the Black Agenda Report.
Black Agenda Report, we call ourselves the Journal of African American Political Thought and Action. We try to track down and talk about the things nobody else is talking about, tell the stories nobody else is telling. My journalistic experience before Black Agenda Report is nada, nothing. I'm what they call a citizen journalist. I didn't go to J school. So, what we're doing is we're taking this into our own hands. We are not waiting for the experts. What they call so-called credentialed journalists are addicted to expert stuff. But then again, these are the same experts that told us that guy had WMD. And back when I was young, these are the same experts that told us that if we didn't go over there to fight the Viet Cong, they'd be over here in 10 or 15 years. So much for the experts. The power of being your own media is the power of, that's just what it is. It's the power of being your own media. For instance, what we do is twice a year, we do a report card on the Congressional Black Caucus. It's factually based because we base it on their legislative records, and nobody can argue about those legislative records. The next issue of the report card for the Congressional Black Caucus is going to come out in September, and we're also going to be in Washington, D.C. at the Congressional Black Caucus's annual legislative conference, as they used to call it CBC Week, to hand out what we call the Lawn Jockey Awards for the worst performing four members the Congressional Black Caucus. That will be on September 26th. You can find out about it at www.blackagendareport.com.
I'm sorry. I had put my phone on hold, and I was just talking up a Brian, thank you so much. I was talking up a mean streak about the Black Agenda Report, and I'll start over. Suggesting and encouraging that you go to blackagendareport.com each morning and get your morning shot, which is a collage of news in the Black Agenda. And then there is Black Agenda Radio, which you will find on Progressive Radio, and it's something that I encourage. This is independent Black media that we can begin to support today. And, you know, it's really interesting, and Alpha is going to be joining us. I wonder if when we sit around and we talk about those things for which we can do to empower our own community, if we think about the detail, the Black Agenda Report, the Black Commentator, which the Black Agenda Report was born from, this is one of the most important media outlets in our effort to empower our communities. And we are not supporting it at the extent that we should support it. You know, one of the things that I've been ranting about, and it's been my rant of the day, is that we don't know enough about those people who depend on us to get elected. Let's, as an example, as Bruce just said in that clip, let's just talk about the Black Congressional Caucus. These are people who take the time at the Black Agenda Report. They take the time to ensure that we have the facts, that we know truth from confusion. So I'm hoping that we can be of assistance at our common ground in ensuring that we're supporting the kind of media that we ought to. Every year they do a report card on the Black Congressional Caucus. Every week there are commentary about important events, both domestically as well as internationally. They keep us focused on those things which fall and impact in our community and in our life. They also are big, you know, Glenn Ford, who is the co-editor with Bruce, and if it sounds like, and it is, if it sounds like you're not, for some reason Brian is saying that he's getting dead air. Please check your speakers. I'm looking at a meter on my microphone, and it says that that I'm doing okay. So please check your speakers if you're getting dead air. But one of the things that we lack, and you all can call me if you think that I'm all off about this. Tonight our number is 347-838-9852, and we will be taking calls up until our guest arrives and up until my co-host Alpha arrives. But one of the things that we have to really focus on is resolve. We thank you for being here at our common ground tonight. We really do appreciate your coming. I have not heard from, I'm just waiting for someone to pop up on my board, a number to pop up on my board. But one of the things that we really do need to do is we need to be selective. We need to have resolve. We need to have commitment, and we need to have passion, which is clarified. I didn't say emotion. I said passion. It will take passion to build our common ground. It will take our focus on what is happening with our children. It will take our it requires our focus in what is happening in regard to violence. It will take our focus to somehow sieve the nonsense from the priorities. The nonsense like the Image Awards and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin and the Buckman woman. It will take our resolve and our intelligence to really sift through what are the things that are happening in Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida, South Carolina, Boston, that will make a difference in our lives today, in the lives of our children, and in our future. Not as me, not as I, but as a community. You know, I hear a lot of people, I've been doing talk radio for a very long time, since 1989. And I might be dating myself, and it may be time for me to retire because I really shouldn't come to this microphone with a tirade of complaints, notes, because it sounds like I'm preaching. But I'm speaking from a well-tuned passion. This is not emotional. When most activists have been involved in this struggle for a very long time, you pick up gems of wisdom, and then you have to hone those gems into something that makes sense for us to move forward on. And I am telling you, folks, I have not seen the alarm as loud and as pronounced. I have not seen my mother, who happens to be 86 years old, said to me on yesterday in one of our conversations, for those of you who are new to our common ground, I'm in Boston and my family's in Florida. And my mother said to me, as I daily call her and read her the news from the Black Agenda Report or wherever, and my mother said to me, I thought I would never live to see the day that black children are doing what they are doing, that black adults have abandoned their children in times of need, that the black church has abandoned its community, and that black organizations have virtually disappeared. That's my mother. And I'm about on that road as well. Alpha, thank you for joining us at Our Common Ground once again to co-host with me, so I won't go on tirades.
Well, Janice, good evening. I want to apologize. I've gotten caught up here at the house.
You don't have to apologize.
I've got some things on my plate that I couldn't avoid. I even had an alarm go off at 10 minutes to 9, and when I looked up, it was you were calling. So I'm sorry.
Wow.
Glad to be with
you. That's quite all right. I'm talking about what we need in our community. You know, and I often wonder, I walk through the street, Alpha, and I'm looking at people and I'm saying to them, I'm wondering if they're worried about the numbers of black men and women who are going and who are in prison. I'm wondering about if they are worried about one of Can I tell you one of the worries I had this week? Can I?
Go ahead.
Okay. I've been worried about old soldiers, black people who get, I think I had this conversation with you. Maybe I've been worried about it longer than I think I've been worried about it. Who is going to take care of the many black and African-American men and women who fought our wars in the 60s and paid with their lives in the sense that they gave up any benefits. They went to jail and to prison. We have a lot of black activists, Panther Party members, American Liberation Army, African Liberation Army members who fought the fight for us. And as a result, they couldn't get a job. They don't. They're 75 years old now. They can't get. They couldn't get a job. They had to take all jobs under. They had to be paid under the table, so they don't have any Social Security. During Women's History Month, I've been worried about all of the women who wash clothes, iron clothes, cleaned bathrooms and living rooms and took little white children to school and picked them up, even when their own children were not being taken care of, and took care of families in this country. They were paid in cash. They are now 80 years old, and they get less than $400 a month in Social Security, and that is it. I'm worried about that. Are you worried about that?
Well, Janice, we've covered this too, and you're absolutely right, because that is, how can I put this? That is part of the problem now, and it's part of the problem, and it's cloaked because the youth today simply don't understand that, nor do they know that this is what the reality is. The people who stood up in the 60s and the 70s can be basically labeled as destitute now. And there's no one, all, like you said, all of the people who stood up and in these movements and now and couldn't get jobs over the years and have no Social Security to speak of, and they're basically just getting by.
Yeah. Hey, Alpha, we've got a board full of calls, and I've got to figure out if one of them is Bruce Dixon. So I'm going to open up a phone line. Good evening, Bruce.
Hello? Hello?
Is this Bruce?
No, this is Aranda.
Okay, Aranda, I've got to put you on hold.
Okay.
Bruce Dixon? Hello?
I don't know. This is Brother Brock. If so, I'll hold on.
Okay, Brother Brock. I'll put you on hold. Okay, Alpha. So neither one of those were Bruce, and I'm waiting for him to call in, and I hope he does soon. I mean, this Blog Talk Radio thing can be very confusing if you're accustomed to. I mean, I'm still confused. I don't have a call screen or anything coming out of terrestrial radio. Coming out of U.S. Talk Network, where there was a call screener and everybody was taking care of everything back in, thank you, GPW, everything was taken care of out of, in the back kitchen. So I'm not sure if I'll ever get accustomed to this, but we can continue in our discussion before. I do have a feature on Black Agenda Radio that I'd like to share with our audience, Alpha. But I do think that we have got to think more closely. You know, I don't have time. I don't have enough money. I will never have enough money.
And at one time, I was one of the top 20 best paid black people in America, or some old crazy shit, nonsense like that. But I don't have enough money to worry about the Federal Reserve Bank. Shut it down and shut up about it. That's my position on that. I have to worry about all of the people in our community. They're not only getting their homes foreclosed on now, Alpho, they're getting scammed by debt collectors where Chase Bank sold the debt even though they told the people that they weren't going to foreclose on their house. And people are running around and they can't figure out what to do.
Hey,
I've got to worry about parents. We're police thugs are killing our children. And parents who feel that they have no other right other than to try to be understanding. How can you be understanding about a grown man with a badge, a thug with a badge, shot your child in the back while he was trying to cooperate?
Well, Janice, even like I was saying, you know, you can't carry that burden of having to worry about those particulars. You know, the people who have blazed this trail, the people whose shoulders we stand on, and even those who are still alive and those who are still in a very bad way because of a stance that they took when they were young. And this is what
but
is
no,
so...
No. See, Alpha, I disagree with you on that. I disagree with you on that wholeheartedly. Because while we like to talk about the shoulders, the people of the shoulders in which we stand, I've got to decide that there are people who now are standing on my shoulders.
Well,
and I cannot falter but too many times.
Well, see, Janice, you push yourself.
It comes out of this, Alpho. I've been on this microphone trying to help us reorganize, rethink, and think in a logical and strategic way about black liberation since 1989, and I'm still talking about the same things.
Okay. So you can only affect things you have power over. You are basically trying to, with the message, you are trying to get it out there about your concerns and how you are concerned. And I'm simply saying this. The people who have sacrificed are now being thrown under the bus by the youth and the people who simply refuse to pick up that baton and continue to carry it. You know, this is, you know, I understand where your concerns are. I understand what your worries are.
But see, I can't worry about what Brother Malcolm, Baba Marcus Garvey, Brother Martin Luther King, Sister Angela Davis were able to or unable to achieve. I've got to worry about what I'm able to achieve, because there are people standing on my shoulders. And by the way, I think my granddaughter is listening tonight, and I want to once again end her birthday, her 18th birthday week celebration, with saying to her that a grandmother's love never falters, and it's been a wonderful week to celebrate her birthday with her, and happy birthday once again. Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Alpha, but you know, my grandmother stuff overcomes me. GPW is telling me that Bruce Dixon should be in my ear in about a few minutes. And before he joins us, I'd like to share this with our audience.
For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.
Report on the following videotaped savage beating of 16-year-old Houston resident Chad Holly, who was 15 at the time of this beating. We wish we had more to report because at the current moment, all that is going on are fake gestures like town hall meetings where people can express their outrage, vent about past occurrences of police terror, and pretty much cool their asses off and feel like something was done by being provided a platform to air their grievances. The same way that Trey Joyner's situation was dealt with in the Trinidad sector of Northeast Washington, D.C. in 2009, and countless other examples like it is being relived by Houston residents as we speak. This basically accounts to a photo op for the police forces whose own members are the terror agents. Oh, if movies could only be real.
I just met the most marvelous bunch of niggers. The most marvelous bunch of niggers.
You get him?
It has been so long since there existed a vibrant, principled, and effective black journalism, few young people today have experienced it. The black printed press is a flickering shadow of its former self. Black radio news is less than a whisper, having been made nearly extinct decades ago. And television offers a menagerie of black news readers who don't even write their own lines or care what comes out of their mouths. America's racist chickens are coming home to roost in Wisconsin, Ohio, New York, and California. Under Republican governors like Scott Walker and John Kasich, and Democratic governors named Andrew Cuomo and Jerry Brown as well. Racism has always been the Achilles heel of the U.S. labor movement, the insurmountable obstacle centered in white American hearts and minds, that has prevented the United States from forging any kind of real, lasting compact between its peoples. If there is an American exceptionalism, it is race, which has kept the U.S. from even coming close to forming a true working people's party. It is racism that allows poverty to be perceived as something that black people have inflicted on the nation, rather than the other way around. It is the multitudinous crimes of racism that have made criminality synonymous with black in the American mind. And through the remarkable powers of racial transference, public workers have now become fair game for abuse because they are associated with blackness. The president proudly proclaimed that he has no ideological differences with the Bushes over education. In fact, Obama has taken George Bush's No Child Left Behind program as a starting point to launch his own so-called Race to the Top, an all-out assault on teachers' unions and the very nature of public schooling in the United States. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
After more than a decade of stubborn community organizing and persistent lobbying, the Community Low Power Radio Act allows the FCC to grant broadcast licenses to not-for-profit organizations on the third adjacent and, in some cases, the second adjacent spot on the radio dial between existing full-power commercial radio stations. Grab that mic. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.
And joining us now is Bruce Dixon. Bruce Dixon, managing editor of the Black Agenda Report. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us tonight at Our Common Ground.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Good evening.
Well, we're really excited to have you. I have a co-host tonight, Alpha of the Alpha Show. And we've been sharing with our audience the tremendous and intensively important work that you, along with your colleagues at Black Agenda Report, have been doing. So, you know, I'm just so glad to have you as part of this Our Common Ground family. Let's start off by by talking about you before we talk about the Black Agenda report. I want to share with my audience that I love the idea that you're a habitual troublemaker. I believe it. I will always believe it. And that you're an incorrigible activist, as you've been described, and that you have been so since 1968, and you are a former rank and file member of the Black Panther Party from 1969 to 1970. You were a union activist in factories and plants and workplaces, and in the 1980s, a community organizer. As a matter of fact, Bruce, you may not remember me, but I did meet you in Chicago once. Not in Chicago, in Washington, D.C. once with Ron Daniels when I was with his campaign for New Tomorrow. Tell us about your journey.
Oh, well, it's not over yet, I hope. I mean, I don't look back much, really. You know, when you get to be a certain age, you know that there's a lot more behind you than there is in front of you, and it kind of makes what remains in front of you rather urgent. So I don't look back much. I mostly look at the present and at the future and what a difference I can still help people make, and there's definitely a lot of areas where differences need to be made.
Share with us your perspective as an activist and as a person who has had your eye on the issue of liberation and justice in our community about the political landscape of today.
Well, we're in a place we've never been before. I guess you could say that all the time, can't you? we're in a place we've never been before. Perhaps the paramount fact of the political landscape today for African-American people is that we've come to the end of the road for a certain type of Black politics. We've got, you know, Black people in public office as far as the eye can see. We've had Black secretaries of state. We've had a Black Supreme Court justice on the court more or less for every minute of the last 40 years almost. And now we've got a Black president. And the Black president that we've got, how can I say that? We've sort of played a nasty trick on ourselves. If you suppose that the aim of constituent politics is to do some constituency some good, let's say that you represent a constituency and then you get elected to office and then you try to do things for that constituency, well, that's kind of the opposite way that it seems to work with a Black president. With a Black president, many Black folks seem anxious to remind each other that, well, you know what, he's not a Black president. He's not supposed to do nothing for Black folks, okay? We're supposed to do something for him. We're supposed to not question him. We're supposed to not demand anything from him, or else we'll be haters. And it's just a kind of a strange trick that we've played upon ourselves, where we have convinced ourselves that it is wisdom to expect nothing and to demand nothing. And it's a complete reversal of the kind of sensible politics of only a few years ago. Like I said, we've elected a Black president, but we made no demands on him in the election process. He didn't come out of a selection process that had anything to do with our communities. And now almost every policy that his administration is pursuing is hurting Black folks almost more than it's hurting anyone else. The Bush wars in Afghanistan and in the Middle East are continuing, and we may any day now be involved in a war in Libya. The Wall Street bailout that was commenced under President Bush couldn't even get it through Congress himself. he had to call Barack Obama in September, the president in waiting, to come to Washington, D.C., and to scold the black Democrats and the white Democrats into supporting the Bush bailout. And so now we've got a situation where black unemployment is skyrocketing, and the gap between black and white wealth is as high as it's ever been and expanding as fast as it ever has. But yet and still, the polling data indicates that black people are more optimistic about the U.S. economy than any other segment of the population. So the dominant thing of the political, the dominant characteristic of the political landscape is something that we call the Obama delusional effect. The fact that we've got a black face in the White House has caused many of us to just take leave of our senses.
Mm-hmm.
And we care
mm-hmm.
not that we are the most unemployed. We care not that our resources, our societal resources, are being diverted for wars that only a few years ago we were protesting when Bush pursued them. We care not for any of that. We have just embraced a sort of black royal family. And our politics, instead of being small D democratic, have become medieval.
Back in February, Bruce, and I know Alpha has some questions that he wants to, some topics that he wants you to cover. You wrote in, I mean, I follow you every week. I mean, some of the stuff that, and we can talk about media, but you wrote about President Barack Obama that 4 years after declaring himself Joshua to Dr. King's Moses, he resembles Pharaoh more than anybody else.
Well,
that
seems
to be
clear. It's not just that he resembles Pharaoh, it's that we treat him like Pharaoh. You know, I mean, we're in a situation where we need to be letting Pharaoh go. We need to be letting Pharaoh go. It seems that every black political discussion hinges or starts upon, well, I just love the president. Well, you know, you don't want to criticize the president. Well, you know, we elected him and he supposedly represents us, but we're really not supposed to ask him to do anything for us, and we just have to just man up and not ask for anything. We just have to man up and not demand anything. And that is a profoundly self-defeating and anti-democratic attitude. That is the kind of attitude that people had back in the days when they had kings and queens, when we were supposed to be just happy to bask in their reflected glory and allow ourselves to be happy when they allowed us to glimpse them, as Zora Neale Hurston used to say, surrounded by a fraction of the wealth that they've trampled out of our hides. Many of us who were alive and sentient during the 1990s remember a little Will Smith movie called Independence Day. You remember that movie, don't you?
Yes.
I saw that movie in Chicago about 1996 in a theater full of black people in Chicago, in a dark room full of strangers, most of them black, maybe two-thirds or three-quarters black. You know what the scene was in that movie that got the biggest applause from the audience? I'll tell you what it was. It was the scene where the alien flying saucers materialized over the White House and blew it to splinters. And the crowd just jumped up and said, yay, hooray, Bill Clinton was the president then. He was supposed to be our first
mm-hmm.
black president too, remember
mm-hmm.
that? Imagine.
Yes, I do remember that.
Imagine that movie, yeah, and if you saw that movie in a crowd full of black folks in the ghetto like where I was in Chicago, I bet they stood up and cheered then too, didn't they? Tell the truth, okay?
Yeah, they probably did. I have to admit, I was one of those people I saw the movie after it was out 2 years later.
Now, imagine that that movie came out today. Imagine that it came out today.
Well, all you have to do is watch the event.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if that movie came out today, oh, my God, I wonder if Sasha and the dog made it out okay. You know.
We have always romanticized.
Yeah, well, I'm saying we used to identify ourselves as a people of struggle. Now we identify ourselves with the powerful and the powers that be. And we don't get much of anything out of that. At least when we identified ourselves as people of struggle, we struggled. We defied authority when it was illegitimate. We fought for our rights, and we stood up for everybody else's rights, too. Now, what do we stand for? What do we fight for?
I'm not sure we're fighting for anything.
Yeah. I am one of those people
that really identify in our community that we are so bifurcated about our circumstances, about our politics, that we pick and choose whatever makes us feel good first, and then we get angry about the reality of our lives second. And I'm not so sure if the ship has sailed for us or we can turn it around. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I always like to think that it can be turned around. I've got grandchildren. Heck, tomorrow is Sunday, and I'm going to spend, the late morning and early afternoon cooking for several grandchildren. So I do like to think that there is going to be a future for us. that's sort of my default position, but it's going to be a struggle, and we're going to have to find ways to get the message out to each other, to carry on conversations with each other, like the conversations that you have with your audience here on Blog Talk Radio all the time. But we're going to have to expand those conversations and expand the circles of awareness and expand the capacity for struggle. We're going to have to own our own conversations. It's very important that we own our own conversations and that we take leadership in our communities for making something happen.
Well, Mr. Dixon, this is Alpha. My question, and I don't want to be the devil's advocate here.
Oh, go ahead. The devil needs an advocate.
When we are in a position where we face a reality of why would the powers respect the voting power that black people have if they don't use it? You know, we as a family, we as a radio talk family, can come to understand, you know, the nuances, the ins and outs, the what has to be done, what needs to be done, and we may represent maybe 1 or 2% of the population of the black community, when the majority of the black community has been so miseducated and so dumbed down and turned to a position of in that rut of day-to-day, make the money, live week-to-week, paycheck to paycheck. And those who rise above the situation and come out as products of the public educational system and have taken advantage of the college and what have you represents a very small minority of our community. And here in Chicago, we still have that mentality of why go to the polls and vote. So why would the powers even respect us as a community, as a people? And not like they've respected us in the last 400 years at all, but we have not learned our lessons, period. And I'm not speaking of those who pay a particular interest in politics and you know, the community and what has to be done and education and so forth. I'm talking about the everyday get up and go to work African American that seems to have no interest whatsoever. I have 12 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren. I have a dog in this fight, and I would simply like for them, as I constantly preach to them, about, you know, paying attention and being more aware and educating themselves on the political landscape.
Well, like I said, brother, I have to be, I think I understand what you're saying, but I have to be a serious optimist about this. Look at, for instance, one place to start is to look at all the energy that the powers that be have exerted just to keep us from having conversations like this. Okay? Right now, when you go to, that goes to the importance of media. People in this society are not allowed to hear their own voices. They're not allowed to hear their own voices, and they're not allowed to own, we're not allowed to own our own conversation. 40 years ago, there used to be black journalism on the radio. And I think earlier, just a few minutes ago, your host played a piece from Glenn Ford where he talked about black journalists who refused to let themselves be used and took out an ad to assure the black public to this effect back in 1970. And Ford asked the question, he said, can you imagine such a thing happening today? The black press today doesn't believe they owe the community anything. Black journalism, journalism period, doesn't serve people, and black journalists don't serve black people, and there practically is no black journalism. As a matter of fact, there practically is no journalism. This is the extent.
Well, it is, you know, it is a matter of the theories of outcome. Glenn Ford's father was a very important person in the history of black radio in this country. As a matter of fact, I was one of the terrestrial radio hosts who back in the 80s hosted his McDonald's Black History Notes for the first time. And Glenn and you come from a place, and this is about outcome, come from a place where you were formed in your passion, your concern, and your understanding about your place in our community.
Well, the question
and
is,
that
though,
makes
that
a difference.
But the place where I was formed, I'm 60 years old, though. The place where I was formed, the world that formed me no longer exists. And the world that is being allowed to form people these days is the same in some ways, but very, very different in many, many ways. I was 18 years old in Chicago in 1968 and 69. 42 years like that is a quarter of the way back to emancipation. The world of 1968 and 1970, in 1968 and 1970 in Chicago, firms were still relocating to Lake Street in the west side of Chicago and the south side of Chicago to take advantage of black labor, to take advantage of black labor. That's how far distant of the universe of today is from of the landscape of that era. So our needs are, even if our needs are in large part the same, the terrain upon which we operate is very, very different. And one of the things that has happened is that the bad guys, the lords of finance capital, the masters of the society, have clamped down on our ability to communicate with one another. They've clamped down on it. They have ended commercial support for journalism, practically. There are now 4 to 6 PR people working in America for every journalist, according to Professor Bob McChesney and John Nichols. And in a couple of years, it'll be 8 to 1. You know, so there is no machinery that's out here for people to be able to get accurate information about the world. There is only commercial media. The black conversation that you get on black radio and so-called black TV and black entertainment is completely owned by for-profit billionaire, by corporations that are run for-profit by billionaires. So our conversation is owned by these people. We don't get to talk about anything on the radio much unless these people approve and unless these people think it can help them sell lifestyles or products. So it's no wonder that things are, shall we say, different. But where we start from, though, is the fact that they've had to go through an immense amount of time and trouble and an immense number of lies just to keep us from having this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But we're having it anyway.
So, well, one of the things I wanted to hear from your impression is, what if, I have a lot of what ifs in my brain, what if we demanded of this black congressional caucus to challenge this president? Of course, they would have constituencies that would be very confused by it, and most of the black people within their constituency would be very angry. But what if we need to have a national voice that challenges the posture, the positioning, the policies that are supported by this president, and the principles from which he seems to operate? What if that happened, Bruce Dixon?
Well, in the spirit of full disclosure, I got to tell you that I'm a member of the State Committee of the Green Party here in Georgia. And our organizing strategy and our political strategy here in Georgia is based on building our party out, first in the black community and everywhere else, but along the issues and around the issues of mass incarceration. Now, that said, I did say earlier that we are at a kind of dead end for the kind of black politics that we have. I'm from Chicago. I only moved down here to Georgia at the end of 2000. I spent perhaps a quarter century of my life in Chicago running oppositional campaigns and volunteering and staffing and consulting to political campaigns and opposition campaigns inside the Democratic Party. So those who are made, and what you're talking about is reforming or enlivening or democratizing the Democratic Party. Unfortunately, many of us have tried that for 20 and 30 years, really for 75 years, ever since 1933. And what you see is what we've gotten so far. I would maintain that it's a dead end, and it's time to build something else.
Mm-hmm.
That's what,
you know, I spent 2 years with the campaign for New Tomorrow, and it really wasn't about Ron Daniels running for president, but it was a platform from which we could be heard. And as the national chair, I traveled all over this country week after week, meeting with groups of black activists, groups of black people, groups of people who were interested in progressive and third-party politics. And we could not, at a time where we were about to come up to the Clinton presidency, we could not get people to understand. I mean, one of our great big partners was the Green Party, but we could not get people to understand what it would mean to be able to extract ourselves from the two-party, the existing two-party system that had not served our interests. And what I hear you saying,
yeah,
pardon me?
At this point, it's pretty clear that the Democratic Party, well, that the Democratic Party exists to gather up and channel our oppositional energy, our activist energy, and channel it into safe places that do not threaten the establishment. And it's clear also that, in a sense, there are two Democratic parties. There's the Democratic Party that invites us to vote every 2 or 4 years, and there's the Democratic Party and dismisses us when it's not time to vote, and there's the Democratic Party which is in session every day, which is a party of lobbyists and the military-industrial complex and the prison lobbies and Wall Street. And this is the party that most of our Democratic politicians answer to every day. They only want to hear from us when it's election time. And there are plenty of ways that they have of siphoning black energy, siphoning activist energy, promoting the careers of a handful of people. And, but these do not end in anything that actually benefits our folks. I'll give you an example, a concrete example. In Georgia here, we had a prison strike back in December, where we had inmates in 8 or 12 different prisons who refused to report for their work assignments. The prison administration locked down those prisons and has proceeded with a campaign of brutal repression against prisoners, in which the Green Party is involved, along with the Ordinary People's Society and some other folks, in getting lawyers for these people and making sure that they get justice. The NAACP was part of a coalition. Tried to stand up for the prisoners' rights. And now, most recently, we understand that the NAACP may be withdrawing from the coalition. And why would they do that? Well, it happens that some people involved with the NAACP have reentry programs and drug treatment programs, and that this is how they actually make their livings. And so once they're in the door talking with the governor, then beyond that, what do they need a coalition to stand up for prisoners' rights for? They've got what they want. So their model is to stir up a little stuff and to get in the door and make a deal, get a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
the way a lot of our black leadership operates. They only want
so
the masses.
We are pimping and being pimped.
Well, it's not totally pimping. I mean, I don't want to go too much salt
on
the brothers. I'm saying that.
Because you only gave one example.
Well, I'm saying in the case of the folks in Georgia, I wouldn't call it pimping, because even a bad reentry program, even an incompetent drug treatment program, is better than a good prison. I promise you. Trust me. You know, and keeps the people safer and more economically prosperous than a good prison. Prisons are a bad idea, period.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't have a problem with these people making money off reentry if somebody's going to get paid for it. But
I do have a problem with
a model of black leadership that says that that's all the public education, that's all the public activism, that's all the public stirring up and public examination of issues we have to do is just enough to get me a contract. That's problematic.
Yeah. But you see, the thing is that I think that we are depending on illusions to be our backbone in our community. So if people are running bad programs where the outcomes are not what we need and that is not their intent, it is a problem.
I don't even believe that they're running bad programs. It's just what I have a problem with is the style of leadership that is just a race broker, essentially. A broker that says, okay, we're going to stir up just enough public outrage in the black community to get us another contract, to get us another set aside. That is a model of black leadership that has been around for the longest, and that is the model of black leadership that our Congressional Black Caucus follows to a T. I have never yet been to a CBC weekend, although I've meant to go a couple of times, all right? But you might have gone, all right? I promise you that the last two times I've seen the program, the last 2 years, you would have found a dozen different workshops on how to do business with the government, a dozen different workshops on how to become a black contractor.
Oh, I know. I haven't been to CBC Week in well over 6 years, and I used to be that used to be an annual thing for me. We only have a little bit of time with you, Bruce, because I do have another guest coming on in our second hour. But one of the things that I want to talk about is the Black Agenda Report. I have been one of your most enthusiastic supporters, even at the time, at the beginning of the Black Commentator, and then with the development of the Black Agenda Report. Tell my audience, please, how they can support such important independent media.
Well, you can go to www.blackagendareport.com, and there's a donate button on every page. And you can click that, and you can drop some money to help us keep doing what we're doing. The problem is that on the Internet, as they say, everything's free. But then again, not really. It's free to receive, but the people who write, the people who build the website, the people who dig, you know, all this costs a little money. Our hosting costs money. It's actually not possible that, you know, it's actually not possible to have a $9 website at GoDaddy and reach a half million people a month. You can't do that. You've got to get some really sophisticated cloud hosting and some really sophisticated software, and you've got to study up on this. So Black Agenda Report is supported by its readers, and it's supported by the earnings that Glenn and I get from public speaking and money that we put into it from our paying jobs on the side when we have them. So you can definitely use your support. You know,
well,
the financial model for journalism just doesn't exist nowadays anymore.
One of the things that we want to do at Our Common Ground is spend the month of April raising funds from our audience and from the many people that support us to get money traffic into the Black Agenda Report. So I'm hoping that you were a little late. I'm hoping that you can come back and help us kick that off so that during the two-hour period each Saturday night at Our Common Ground, we can depend on our audience to go to www.blackagendareport.com, and I hope that you do it tonight and make a donation, and you can do that by making a donation at PayPal. You can also set up your own system out there that once a month, $20 once a month to Black Agenda Report. It is so important. We are losing ground. We have no traction, and we have to have the kind of information that we get from the Black Agenda Report folks. And there is no doubt that you're not going to get anything but brain damage from so many of the media outlets, as Bruce has pointed out. We have no black TV. Forget it. There's no such thing. To get hard news, to get news analysis, to get it on a daily, a weekly basis, and to podcast it. I am a big podcaster, and I go out on my iPad every morning with the morning shot from the Black Agenda Report and the podcast of the just wonderful work, journalistic work that they're doing about the domestic issues and how they affect us, about international issues that affect us. Now, Bruce,
yes,
can
ma'am.
I get you back?
Sure. You've got
and
all my numbers.
Alpha can get a word in edgewise. He's going to tell me about that tomorrow.
She never lets me talk. She never lets me ask serious questions. She just talks and talks and talks. Mr. Dixon, I want to thank you for joining us this evening.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
And Bruce, let me, we had a question in our chat room about whether or not you have a system for making monthly donations.
Yes, ma'am. For monthly donations, what you have to do is you have to, there's two buttons, one button that says donate and one button that says subscribe. And for the subscribe button, you have to choose an amount before you hit subscribe. If you hit subscribe and you have not chosen an amount, you'll get an error message that makes it look like the whole thing is not working. It's broken. It's not broken. It just wants you to specify an amount before you hit the word before you hit the button subscribe. And you do not need a PayPal account. All you need is a Visa Diner's card or MasterCard. I don't think it accepts American Express on that one.
Okay. I really do want to, you know, today I was ranting on the Alpha show about we need to call a moratorium on all award programs, awards to Black leadership and awards to for this and that and the other. But you and Glenn Ford and Kimberly Crenshaw, you all deserve a journalism media award and our gratitude for what you do. I know that it must be very, very difficult. We've got a lot of people who want to talk to you, and I'm going to take one call, someone who's been waiting for a long time, and then I've got to move on to our guest, who is waiting patiently. We're going to go to Chicago. You're on the air. I respect you. 732, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. Hi, this is Scott from Sports Fans Coalition.
Okay, Scott. I'm going to be with you in a minute. Thank you.
I hope
you're enjoying the show. I'm trying to figure out which one of these... that's not the one that's been waiting. Oh, here we go. Chicago, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call with Bruce Dixon.
Hey, Janice, how are you? This is House.
House music lover.
How are you? Mr. Dixon, it's a pleasure talking to you. Alpha, what's going on?
Hey, how is it? How's it going?
Everything's great. I just wanted to call in and say hello and give you a big thanks for your website. I was late to it. I really wasn't aware of Black Commentator before you guys branched off and created Black Agenda Report. I think I first heard it from Janice, but I got the biggest dose listening to you on Wednesdays on another show. And I do like listening to that, but either way, I'm really grateful for your site. And the first article that really struck me, I think you referenced it a little bit earlier, in terms of how people that supported Obama trying to reconcile his support is kind of driving them crazy. And I've been on that site probably every day since then, and the articles are great. And I really appreciate the service you guys do. And I'll try and definitely be one of the people that support you financially. But I'm definitely going to get some of those shirts, the two left for Obama shirts, and probably start handing those things out. That's
I know you will.
Pretty much where I am right now. And I did want to ask, because to me it seems like everything with the Republicans and the really the libertarians that took over the Republican Party, even though they had their own national party, they couldn't get elected as a third party, you know, past Dogcatcher. So so with this influx of money through Citizens United and, you know, all the different steps they took. They are elected officials, Congress and the governors, and we see what they're doing. Is there any way that you can see that the left people in the Democratic Party will do the same thing in the future?
Whatever happens positive, I'm afraid it's going to happen outside of the Democratic Party first before it can ever happen inside it, and it will probably not happen inside it at all. For instance, during the happenings in Madison, there were plenty of people under the dome in Madison, Wisconsin, talking about, well, general strike. Let's all just go out tomorrow. What can they do? Are they going to fire all the cops, all the firemen, all the teachers, all the bus drivers? Are they going to fire us all? They can't do that. Let's just go out. Did you hear a single member of labor's hierarchy do anything? They invited Joe Biden to come down and address the people under that dome. And Joe Biden checked it with the White House, and guess what happened? It didn't happen. Joe didn't show up.
Mm-mm.
Okay? So, you know, you're trying to sell soap to people who don't bathe. It's just not going to happen out of the hierarchy of the Democratic Party. It's not going to happen. Give it up.
Yeah, well, head of labor to come down and speak or whatever out of the Obama administration, and
they couldn't get Joe Biden. Joe Biden identifies himself as the labor guy to do this. There were plenty of people in different parts of Wisconsin who wanted to do a one-day general strike.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a general strike is when just everybody just walks out.
Right.
And general strikes, I will tell you, are illegal in the United States. And they've been illegal for a long time. But the United States is one of the very, very few places in the world where they're illegal. But it would have carried a hell of a message. What, like the people were saying, what are they going to do? Fire us all? They can't do that.
Didn't Joe Biden speak at one of the union events, and they were just criticizing him for comparing the way Republicans were behaving to rape. And
my understanding is that Joe was invited to Madison to speak while the people were there under the dome.
And
he refused to come to Wisconsin. The president has spoken many times in front of labor audiences,
but
those are the only times when he mentions labor's issues, remember. He would get in front of, during the campaign, he'd routinely get in front of labor's audiences and promise to repeal NAFTA. Well, we know what happened with that. He'd also get in front of labor audiences and promise to push the Employee Free Choice Act. We know what happened to that, too. We've just got what we've got. We're going to have to build something new.
We're going to have to build something new. House Music Lover, thank you for your call. Bruce, that is just a wonderful ending for this segment at Our Common Ground tonight. Folks, you heard it from Bruce Dixon, the managing editor of Black Agenda Report. Something that you have been hearing, but take it to heart. We've got to build something new. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us, and I certainly will be in touch to bring you back. And we're asking our audience to support by subscribing and donating to the Black Agenda Report at least $20 a month. If all of you do that, then we have sustained, vital, accurate, correct, and in-depth news, information, and analysis. Bruce, thanks so much for being with us, and we're looking forward to having you back with us again.
Hope so. Thank you.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Scott Wise. He is the New Jersey, New York coordinator of the Sports Fan Coalition, and we're going to be talking about justice and rights and taking it back.
You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground. Next coming up, the Sports Fans Coalition, consumerism and major sports in America. What's your tax dollar doing, and what are you getting for it? This is Janice Graham. Alpha and I will be right back. Black Voice Collaborative at TruthWorks Network. Tuesdays, A Heart for My People with Dr. Deborah Napier. Thursdays, Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles. And on Friday, it's India Declare After Dark, Real, Raw, and Right Now. On Saturday, it's Just Damn Radio with Alpha of the Alpha Show. TruthWorks Network at Blog Talk Radio. It's the Black Voice Collaborative. For the TruthWorks programming schedule, go to truthworks.ning.com.
And Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 'Cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
And now with us is Scott Weiss of the Sports Fans Coalition. Scott, thank you so much for being patient in coming on. I know we're running way behind time, but we had a very, very intensive first guest, and thank you for joining us here at Our Common Ground with my co-host, Alpha.
Well, thank you for having me on tonight.
Tell us a little about what the Sports Fans Coalition is all about.
We're basically a grassroots sports fans advocacy organization. The organization started back in October of 2009, and basically we saw that fans were ponying up tremendous amounts of money that were going into the pockets of the sports ownership and players, and fans really did not have a voice in the process at all. And we've kind of seen that really play out recently with the NFL locking out the players and shutting down the league. We have felt for a long time that fans need a voice, and, we feel that our organization is really starting to make some inroads into providing that for a lot of millions of passionate sports fans out there.
Now, many people have not seen the professional sports venues as issues of political and public policy advocacy. Let's try to get this straight, as they say. How much of, for instance, can we talk about what's the newest place? Washington, D.C. Arena?
In terms of
Park at D.C.?
Yeah, that would probably be one of the newer ones out there, yes.
Okay. About what, in terms of dollars or percentage of the monies that went into that particular venue, how much was it taxpayer dollars?
Well, here's what I can talk about, because our organization has been very focused on the National Football League lately. And as we did our research, we found that over the past 20 years, $6.5 billion in public financing have gone into the new NFL stadiums. And, you know, it's beyond our comprehension that with that amount of money that the public and the fans are putting up for these stadiums, that we end up having no say in what goes on. What we get for our $6.5 billion is tremendous increases in ticket prices, where, you know, just average families are really not able to afford to attend games anymore. I know when I was a kid, and, you know, I'm sure when you were a kid, people, families, middle-class families could go to ball games and take their families out to games. Basically, they've been priced out at this point, and there's a lot of corporate attendance at professional sporting events, but your average families really aren't able to afford it. And the tax dollars, you know, that money, that $6.5 billion, should be getting fans a lot more than they're getting now. So it really doesn't add up. The other incredible number is that the National Football League has been generating $9 billion a year in revenue. And they're presently on a work stoppage because they can't figure out how to divide that money up. And in an economic climate, which is the worst that it's been since the Great Depression, what industries out there are generating that kind of money? And we just feel it's outrageous that, you know, with that being the case and with the vast majority of that $9 billion coming from fans, that they have had the nerve to go out on a work stoppage. Another thing that we're fighting against right now is that despite the fact that the league is shut down, 31 out of the 32 teams are still requiring people to send in season ticket payment money, which also makes absolutely no sense. The only team that has stated that they're not requiring fans to send in season ticket price money right now is the New York Giants, who just last week announced that until there's a new labor agreement, they're not expecting fans to do that. But, you know, again, it's unfortunate how it plays out, and it just shows our organization more and more how much we're needed to represent the voice of the fans.
Okay, let me try to get this straight. When team owners come to a city, for instance, here in Massachusetts, it's
Foxborough Stadium.
The Gillette Stadium or whoever, Mr. Kraft Stadium or whoever stadium it is, they came to Massachusetts and told people that we were getting a great deal because of the new businesses around the arena, and those businesses eventually pay more in taxes than the government paid in subsidies, et cetera, et cetera. Then they tell us that we're going to just love it because we can go watch the Patriots play when I was saying they should be playing in Fenway Park. And all of those people in that community essentially became NFLville. So when the teams are not playing, it's like a ghost town. Then you can't find any affordable seats or tickets. Then when they play, the local broadcasters black out the broadcasting inside Boston. So for all of the tax dollars, money, and resources to build this new home for this football team and soccer team, I should say, the other people play there, we get screwed, essentially, because we built new roads, we built new infrastructure, new access, and the only one that's benefiting from this are who? The players and the owners.
Yeah, and basically what we see is that, you know, I'm not an expert in this area, but the economic benefits to the cities usually are pretty exaggerated. And what we find is that it's very, very wealthy men who purchase these teams who end up, you know, putting pressure on the communities to put up a lot of public financing for very little in return. You know, another thing that's very common is these owners threaten the communities that they're going to move to a new city, and if they don't get public financing to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, they begin to threaten that they're going to, you know, pick up and move shop. And there's been some teams over the years, team in Cleveland, you know, that kind of packed up in the middle of the night and moved to a new city. So really, they, you know, they play rough, they play dirty pool. And right now in Minnesota is one city where they're, you know, threatening to pick up and move to a new city if they don't get public financing. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, both the owners and the players, when you talked before about the, you know, how is this really a political process, the owners and the players spent millions of dollars in lobbying down in Washington to have their voices heard down there. So when they, you know, they talk out of both sides of their mouth. In the one sense, they say that they don't want Congress getting involved in helping to solve the labor conflict. And then on the other hand, they spend millions of dollars in lobbying efforts to have their agendas, you know, backed up. So it really doesn't make sense. You also talked about TV blackouts. This is another main agenda item that we have for our organization. So for the $6.5 billion in public financing, the NFL blackout rules state that if the team does not have a total sellout of their arena, the home city is blacked out from that game on TV. Now, what can be more outrageous than that? Fans paying, publicly financing hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies for these stadiums, and then when the arena doesn't sell out for many different reasons, fans can't even watch the game on TV. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, but this has been the way they've done business forever. And, you know, unfortunately, there has not been a united voice for sports fans. And we really feel that, you know, we've come along at the right time. Not only is the NFL on a work stoppage right now, but the other three major professional sports are all having their collective bargaining agreements expiring will be expiring in the next year. So there's going to be many of these fights out there, and, you know, we really feel that the fans' voice needs to be heard in these battles.
If you'd like to talk about this issue, you can join Scott Wise and talk with him at 347-838-9852. At Our Common Ground. Scott, let me ask you about, does your organization get involved with college, the issues of college players?
The one major issue that we've involved ourselves with is the college football arena. Presently in college football, as many people know, there is a bowl system. There's not a playoff system, and we're fighting very hard for there to be a playoff system. Again, it's all about money. There are several major conferences in college football that generate tremendous amounts of revenue from the bowl system while shutting out a lot of the smaller conferences. And really, it's the only sport, professional or college, that doesn't have a playoff system that determines the champion. So that actually is, you know, probably one of our top agenda items that we're fighting for. And, you know, we do have a lot of focus on the professional sports leagues, but we also have our eye on the college leagues also.
Alpha?
Well, at this point, what it has turned into is it is what it is, because these these owners. They simply have their, they got the cities by the short hairs. And at some point in time, you know, with all of this raving about spending here, spending there, every state is broke. But look at New York. Look at where all of these stadiums are popping up. And look at the budget deficit of these states. And it just simply creates this amazing, jaw-dropping indignation of how in the hell can you do this and fund these arenas publicly when these people are billionaires. They are fighting over $9 billion, how to split it amongst players and owners. This is not $9 billion that they have. This is new $9 billion. So the billions that these owners have amassed, and people talk about outrageous money being paid to the players. And let me say this. The players are the ones with the blood, sweat, and the tears. They've got the skin in the game. The owners have financial skin in the game, and they're doing very, very well. But when it gets down to it, it's not about billionaires and millionaires fighting to split $9 billion. It's the greed of the billionaires who already all are billionaires, and they're simply looking to put more into their pocket. If anything in this country, there should be, you know, if you want to talk about death penalty, greed should be right there. You know, they talk about deadly sins. Well, there you go. Execute them. What the hell?
Yeah, there. You know, we do look at the fact that, you know, in a lot of states, they're facing, you know, multi-billion-dollar deficits right now, and these billionaire owners are still calling for the communities to pony up, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in funding for stadiums. So I'm in total agreement with you that it makes no sense. We have really chosen not to take the side of the owners or the players in this battle. In the past, whenever there's been a labor dispute, the question that fans are asked is, which side are you taking, the owners or the players? And at Sports Fans Coalition, we've made it very clear that we're taking the side of the fans. And that's something that really hasn't happened before. You know, both parties are at fault here. You know, when we look at the fact that the owners are trying to still collect season ticket money with their league shut down, under the threat of losing your season tickets if you don't pay that money. Yeah, we've probably had the owners push our buttons more than the players during this
How are the players at fault in any, from any perspective? How are the players at fault? All they're out there doing is bleeding, being crippled, and ending their careers. Their lifespan in the sport is so small, and the billions that are being generated in it, the money that's involved, how is it, from any perspective, the fault of the players?
Well, here's the thing. You know, the fans, yes, clearly make the owners very wealthy, and yes, professional football players' lifespans are probably about 3 years, which is really not that great a period of time in the long run. But the reality is fans make the players very wealthy also. And our feeling is that, you know, the fans really haven't been considered by either side. We had asked during the labor negotiations, both the NFLPA and the NFL, for a seat at the table during their negotiations, and we're basically treated the same by both parties.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Scott, you asked for a seat at the table when the players and the owners were negotiating, and you were supposed to represent the fans?
Well, we believe 100% that is an appropriate action on our part. And, you know, here's what it is. 30-some-odd years ago, the players had absolutely no rights. And along came Marvin Miller, who was the executive director in the Major League Baseball Player Association, and Kurt Flood, who was an African-American ball player on the St. Louis Cardinals, who challenged the fact that there was no free agency. And, you know, at that time, people said the same thing. You know, players need to just kind of stay in their place, and the owners have all the power, and there's absolutely nothing the players can do. Well, 30-some-odd years ago, the players finally fought back, and they gained some tremendous power in the process. We kind of see ourselves as the Marvin Millers and Kurt Floods of the fan movement right now, that, yes, we presently have very, very little power, although we're the ones that finance the $9 billion a year in revenue and the $6.5 billion toward the stadiums. But we're trying to become the third powerful player in this process. The reality is we should be the most powerful. There's in the National Football League, there are 32 owners, there's a little less than 2,000 players, and there's millions of football fans. And right now, the millions of people have the very tiniest power in the process. So we feel that our movement makes a lot of sense, and it's just a matter of fans realizing that we have the power and that we need to unite. What group of people is more passionate than sports fans? Unfortunately, over the years, though, they've never kind of joined together and spoken as, you know, one collective voice, and that's really what we're trying to do right now.
Well, Scott,
Let me ask you a question, Scott, about political contributions that some of these venues make. I know that in Boston there is some program where when there is a rock concert or whatever and they have to order food for the performers, that all the food that is left over is donated to homeless shelters, et cetera, in Boston. To me, that's not going far enough. If we are putting, as taxpayers, putting millions of dollars into the coffers of these venues like TD North, which I still call the Boston Garden. And my question is this, and it comes from three nights ago. My grandson, who is nine, has been wanting me to take him to a Boston Celtics game. And I went on a couple of ticket sites, and it just doesn't make sense to buy a seat for a nine-year-old, as a grandmother, for a nine-year-old that's going to cost me $125 so that I'm not sitting in the roof.
Right. Yeah.
How much leverage are you getting on ticket costs? How much leverage are you getting on the question, the political question of political contributions these organizations are making? Because I'd be very upset if Foxborough was giving out political contributions to the Republicans that the Patriots owner supports.
I don't have the figures. Yeah, I don't have the figures in front of me right now. But we had done some tracking of political donations that the owners make, and there was a very, very significant list of political contributions that were made by the owners. And again, like I said, there's been, you know, millions of dollars in lobbying that's been done, more so by the owner side, but toward the ramp up of these labor negotiations, the Players Association also funneled a lot of lobbying dollars, and also there were some individual players that, you know, were seen to have made some sizable political contributions. Mm-hmm. So,
how can people get involved in what you're doing?
Well, basically, at this point, we have a website, sportsfans.org. We are, like I said, we're grassroots, and at this point, we have free membership for our organization. We're asking people right now to get involved, come to our organization's website, and become a free member of the organization. We also have a petition going at SaveNextSeason.com, which we're hoping will you know, put some pressure on the two sides to come to a new collective bargaining agreement, and basically to, you know, stop listening to the status quo and the media out there who say fans can't do anything, and really join our efforts. You know, we're trying to provide that united voice for sports fans out there. The only way that we could do it, though, is if people really come on board with our organization. We need to show numbers. You know, we need to have several hundred thousand members sign up, 500,000, a million members. We feel it's not unrealistic. There are many millions of passionate fans out there, and, you know, if we get them to come on board, we could really, really make a very significant difference.
Well, Scott, I am very surprised that so many of the Republicans that are accepting these donations from such a socialist entity like football.
Well, you know, I think politicians and the like are all fascinated by professional sports and like to hobnob with you know, athletes and owners. So it's not surprising that they're involved in the game. It would be nice if Congress, you know, spoke out for their constituents, or really the fans, rather than the owners and the players. And, you know, we're looking for backing from a lot of different parties. There's a lot of celebrity sports fans out there. To this point, we haven't heard from any of them. It would be nice to, you know, see some of these celebrity who call themselves sports fans to step up and come on board and be a voice for us. So, you know, we're looking for all the support that we can get at this point.
Well, I agree with you 100%. You know, I was just being a little facetious there with the socialist analogy, but that is the biggest, that is the greatest socialist organization when it comes to, you know, socialism is pro football.
Well, I'm suggesting that in the black community, where we have millions of sports fans who have not thought through their sports fan status in terms of consumerism and in terms of their taxpayer status, to really take a look at the kind of public policy advocacy that this organization is initiating. I think it's very important that sports fans, of which I am not one, become responsible about the political issues that exist in regard to labor, in regard to accountability on tax dollars. Scott, I really do thank you so very much for joining us tonight, because I think that what you are doing is progressive, and I certainly wish your organization a lot of success. We do have sports fans in our audience. And I'd like to have you come back and follow up and tell us what progress you're making on this issue, and encourage people who are listening, who are sports fans, to go to sportsfans.org, sign up, and become a responsible political sports fan.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Thank you for, you know, giving our organization, you know, a shout-out out there. I think it could be a really, really exciting time for sports fans. You know, I try not to be too dramatic, but, you know, like I said before, like Marvin Miller and Curt Flood kind of changed the fabric of sports by giving players a voice. This can really be a revolutionary time for the millions of passionate sports fans that are out there to make a difference. And to allow, you know, nine-year-olds like your grandson and 12-year-olds like my son to have an ability to attend these games and to grow up with it. And for a lot of people, it's, you know, it is a big part of their lives. And, you know, hopefully one of the things that we can do is make it more affordable for regular folks to get to these games and not have it just be for politicians and wealthy corporations who can afford seats, to get the people that really belong there back in the seats at the stadiums.
Well, I think you're right, and I wish you all the success, and thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to having you back again. And please extend my thanks to Brian Frederick, your executive director.
Great. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Alpha, time goes by so fast, and we've got some callers on the board, and we only have about 6 minutes. Do you want to go through real fast? You think we can go through real fast?
Some of our callers are long-winded, but let's give it a try.
We certainly want to thank Brian Smith and GPW Radio from Green Party Radio, Greg from Green Party Radio. Athea is with us tonight, and Doc Don, Smooth Operator Steins. And we had Brother Mosey with us earlier. Who am I missing? And we have a couple of guests, and we certainly thank them for being with us, and we thank House Music Lover for his call. 610, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. I respect you. Can you make it real brief?
Yes, of course I'll make it brief. Brother Brock.
Brother Brock from Philadelphia, PA.
One point on the journalist, the media, earlier when he talked about the black
Bruce
radio.
Dixon.
For Brother Dixon, I would add to that the discrimination also comes from within, because when I listen to different stations throughout the internet, black media, they only allow the five different mainstream key voices that everybody knows on all the different stations. Al Sharpton's on every one. And so forth. It's the two or three other ones. So they're not even given room for additional voices to be heard within our own community. And then the last point on the sports, the owners not only are getting all that money from the TV rights and gouging the fans by making the fans pay that additional fee before they even, just so they're allowed to buy the tickets, the owners are also getting the concessions from the food. They're also getting the parking ticket to pay for parking, which is outrageous. And then they get their tax they don't pay taxes for roughly 10 years when they move into a city. And then after 8 years, they tell the city they're going to move so they can renegotiate and get another sweetheart deal. So they're just
right.
Gouging left and right. So thanks
you're
for the show. Keep up
right.
The great work. And I'll hang up, talk, and listen in the background.
Well, we appreciate your call, Brother Brock. And you're absolutely right on both points. And one of the things that we want people to do is to really become passionate about what we need in our community. Please support Our Common Ground. We need to get the word out that we are here as much as we can. And now we're going to go to 954. You've got just 2 minutes to make your point. Uh-oh, he went away. Alpha, thank you once again for joining us on Our Common Ground. I appreciate your support and your being here as my second hand. I know that we do want to say to people that we should remember Japan and the people who have been so victimized by natural causes and man-made causes in Japan. We should also remember that the people who were victims of the Haiti earthquake continue to suffer, and that the return of Bertrand Aristide helps the spirit but does not help the building. And our government has not been very forthcoming in the rebuilding of Haiti. Whatever happened to George Bush and Bill Clinton, who were going to be the ambassadors of the U.S. to Haiti in the rebuilding, I guess that went by.
Wasn't it Senator Colburn who put a senatorial hold on the funds going to Haiti for some nefarious racist agenda that he had? Wasn't that Senator Colburn?
That's the way it goes.
Shut it down?
And everything that we have needed to do, whether it is Katrina, whether it is the people, we have forgotten the people on the Louisiana coast, Gulf Coast, so that we can forget what BP did and we can forget about how our government has mangled accountability and enforcement of our own laws, Alpha. We've got 2 minutes and we need to get out of here, but thank you so much, and thank you for all of you who held on to our phone lines. Aronde, you know, one of the things that I think we're going to do is on Monday night, you all listen very carefully, on Monday night we will do a very, very special Our Common Ground to talk about the issues of the day. Folks, we have gone to war, and they forgot to send the memo. Alpha, thank you so much. All of you out in our chat room and all of you out there who did not join us in our chat room tonight, thank you for being with us. And this is Our Common Ground. We are here each Saturday, 10 p.m. Don't forget to check out TruthWorks. Tuesdays, A Heart for My People. Thursday, Fearless Mother. And Friday, India Declare After Dark, and on Saturday, The Alpha Show. I'm Janice Graham. Have a good weekend. We thank you so much for joining us at Our Common Ground tonight. We encourage you to support those who support our interests. Along with my co-host, Alpha, we hope that you will join us each Saturday night here at Our Common Ground as we speak truth to power and ourselves. Next Saturday night, 10 p.m., I'll be listening for you.